Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the show. Here we are. It's an ensemble show, lots of great people involved. And the great person really involved, the host of it, is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And we have a great hour for you right now, starting with Carol in conversation with Dr. Mark Pitstick. He's had over 40 years' experience in training in hospitals, mental health centers, as a clinical psychologist in private practice, as a holistic chiropractic physician. He's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Soul Proof, Compelling Evidence You Are an Infinite Spiritual Being, published by Soul Proof Productions.
And in your introduction to your book, it's really powerful. It was written by the well-known Dr. Bernie Siegel. And he believes that really, you know, there's a twofold meaning in the mission of writing the book Soul Proof that comes out of believing that you really are a soul. So can you tell us what they are?
Well, first of all, the word soul proof has a dual meaning. And first of all, proof that we are souls, and for people who don't like the religious term so much, and I can understand that, I also use we're beings of consciousness, awareness, energy, infinite beings of energy. So the proof is there, and that's why I do these shows, to help people realize the evidence is already out there, including lots of scientific, clinical, documented evidence. So that's wonderful news. And secondly, soul proof means that we each are soul proof, much like a watch is waterproof or shockproof. That is, since we are infinite beings of energy, we each are right now one with the one with this phenomena we call God. Not maybe someday, hopefully, but we are now. That's what, there's so much evidence for that. That means that we are ready for any challenges that come up in life. You know, you hear the saying, God never puts more on us than we can handle. And that is true. We have everything we need within to handle all of life's challenges and changes. And in fact, there's some good evidence that we as souls even choose our challenges for the opportunities for service and the opportunities for growth therein.
Now, Dr. Pitstick, you also make a very important point I hadn't thought about, and that is that what we see and draw conclusions from every day, you know, are our senses, seeing, hearing, but that they only see 1% of all the energy reality that exists in the world. And can you give us an example, because that really struck me, of what the eyes, our eyes see, that's not true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right, Carol. And we know this from a number of ways, but for example, from quantum physicists, they say that if you look at all the energy and light that exists in our world, and that's the most fundamental description of reality. In other words, to our eyes, it looks like you're solid and I'm solid and we're sitting at desks and so on. But in fact, everything's made up of energy, and much of it within the energy open space. So if they say that if you look at all the light and energy that exists in this world, and it were the size of Mount Everest, the portion that the average human can perceive would be the size of a golf ball. And that's why we fall for this optical illusion. In other words, the one example of the benefit from that is death. We think when somebody's body dies, they die or they're gone, when in fact it couldn't be further from the truth. The only thing that happens is, it's like when you change a winter coat. Let's say when you were in fourth grade, you had a winter coat, and then by the time you're in junior high, you outgrew it. So you got a different coat. That's all that death is. And other cultures recognize that. For example, Native Americans call dying changing worlds. And in India, they call it dropping the body. And so that's why I encourage people to change the vocabulary, some of the language, so it more accurately reflects what really happens, that no one really dies.
And one of the things that you talk about in the book that's part of the 9 categories of evidence that our real selves can't and don't die because energy doesn't die, you talk about, you know, after-death contacts, and I didn't realize that there are statistics now that 65% of widows and 75% of parents whose children die have after-death contacts. That's an awful lot of people. And you have cases in your book, because you have all this valuable research, about what happens when an after-death contact is shared by more than one person of family, because that makes it much more viable for the research.
Yes. As you say, these after-death contacts, we call them ADCs for short, are very common. More than 75 million Americans have had them, and in the past they didn't talk about them so much for fear of being considered kooky or crazy. Well, now people are more open and sharing their inner truth, so we're realizing just how common these are. And as you say, some of these ADCs are shared. For example, my neighbor, who's a dentist, I was up at his house and talking with his mom about this, and she said, oh, yeah, I had one of those. She said, when our sister was dying, I and my sister Ruth were standing out on the front porch, and we were just looking out at the yard. All of a sudden, this white, gauzy figure came up out of the ground, just hovered along the ground in front of us, and then disappeared. And we looked at each other and said, well, I bet our sister just died, and they went in, and she had just passed. So both of them saw the same thing independently. And that's just one way of validating these ADCs. The eminent psychiatrist Carl Jung tells about a dream ADC he had in which a recently departed neighbor came to him in a dream, and they were talking, and Dr. Jung said, well, how do I know this isn't, I'm just not dreaming this? And the neighbor said, well, come over to my house tomorrow, ask my wife to let you in my library. Dr. Jung had never been in his library. On this row, on this shelf, will be this book by this color, by this name. The next day, Dr. Jung did that. It was exactly as he had been told. But the most powerful benefit, Carol, of these comes for people who have them. For example, I know a woman named Sarah whose son died in the Iraq War, and she was just devastated by his death, and she started dreaming about him again, having vivid, lucid dreams that she was talking with him, and that kind of scared her because she thought she's maybe losing her mind. Well, then she started seeing him out of her peripheral vision, which she would turn around and look directly. She wouldn't see anything, but she would see him in her peripheral vision. Now she really thought she was losing her mind. And then someone told her about the soul-proof evidence and these after-death contacts, and instead of being freaked out by it, she was reassured about it, that he was alive and well, and she would see him again.
And it's amazing how many different forms people can have these after-death experiences with a loved one. And, you know, it's very comforting, and I suppose, though, that there's, you know, or people that haven't had them wonder how maybe they've missed something and, you know, not seeing that their loved one had tried to contact them.
Well, a couple things about that. First of all, if a person dies in a pretty debilitated state, for example, we just went to a funeral this weekend of a loved one, and he had been going downhill for 3 years and was under 100 pounds when he finally died of cancer and so on. He probably is going to need a while before he can contact others just because he has to heal up and recharge, so to speak. Next thing I tell people about that, if they've had a loved one pass and they haven't had a contact and wonder why, is soul time is different from earth time. In other words, 5 years in earth time can seem like a blink of an eye in spirit world because there's really no such thing as time. And the last thing I encourage people to do is to, first of all, ask for that, you know, ask and you shall receive, ask for a contact, and then make sure that you're calm and receptive. And that's one reason these after-death contacts occur so often during dreams, when the brain is more quiet and not analyzing, worrying, evaluating, and we're more on the same wavelength as those who are in a non-physical realm.
Oh, you answered my question that I, you know, so well and beautifully. Now, here's a question I have. Because we are hearing today so many more reports of after-death experiences and near-death experiences than, you know, I had ever heard, and it's just happened, like, you know, in the last 10 years or so. So where are these reports, do you think, coming from? So all of a sudden, why are people comfortable giving them?
Well, as I say, we live in a new time. You know, the Internet's been a wonderful way to disperse information. It wasn't so long ago that some church services were given in a foreign language, for example, Latin, and people just walked in there and sat down and listened. They didn't know what was being said, but they just trusted. Well, now we have shows such as yours, TV, radio shows, Internet information, so there's so much sharing of information out there, and then we're realizing hey, these are very common. People are coming out, you know, whether it's about their sexual orientation. It's a new, exciting time we live in where you say, let's be who we are, and people can be more accepting of that. But the last thing is, you mentioned the near-death experiences, and the increase in NDEs, near-death experiences, is a lot due to the increase in medical technology, saving people who would have died before, and then these people get to tell their stories. By the way, there are tens of thousands of documented NDEs. That is, while the person is clinically dead, their consciousness awareness hovers over the table. After a while, gets bored, hovers above the hospital, around the hospital, and upon successful resuscitation without any exposure to family or friends and learned this information, the now revived patient will say, well, while you were working on me, I was watching, and this doctor dropped his pen, and it rolled over by a window, and there's an old red tennis shoe on top of the hospital by an air duct, and they'll send the maintenance men up there to check. It's a locked door. Nobody else can get up there, just as they say. They say there was a car wreck, a blue car and a red car got in this wreck, and described the directions and so on, all totally accurate. And there's
just
no
amazing
way, by the way, that can happen unless, indeed, we have a consciousness that exists beyond, separate from the physical body.
That's Dr. Mark Pitstick in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Soul Proof, Compelling Evidence You're an Infinite Spiritual Being. Kind of a nice thought. It's published by Soul Proof Productions. For more information, go to soulproof.com. Carol Marks returns in just a moment with more interesting information and conversation when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
This is an important message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Protect yourself against hypothermia and frostbite during cold weather. Wear warm clothing that covers your skin and remove any wet clothing immediately. Limit your time outdoors. Watch for signs of hypothermia and frostbite among elderly adults, babies, people drinking alcohol, and others at risk. Seek immediate medical attention if you suspect someone has hypothermia or frostbite. To learn more, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, here's Carol Marks in conversation with author Tanya Ward Goodman. Her book is titled Leaving Tinkertown, a memoir of caring for her dad.
Where is Tinkertown and what is it?
Well, Tinkertown is a roadside attraction built by my father, Ross Ward, in the mountains of New Mexico. It's outside Albuquerque in the Sandia Mountains. And it is a sort of a museum he created, very eclectic, to hold his wood-carved animated Western town. He built a miniature circus that he all wood-carved and made all the wagons. And the whole place is surrounded by walls made out of bottles and cement, just the most eclectic bunch of collections. And he just built it all by himself.
And that's just amazing. Talking about those walls made out of glass bottles, which surround the museum, which is 22 rooms, that's amazing.
Yes. You really never stopped building.
And were you fascinated by the bottles? Did you help build it?
I did. When he first started, he started building the bottles, I think, when I was at the very sort of middle school. And I was a little like, what are you doing there, Dad? You know. But as it grew, it became this beautiful thing and really like a community project. You know, all our neighbors would come by and bring sacks of bottles and stop by to check in on the progress. And then later, when I was living with him and he was ill, we would just build bottle walls just to kind of keep him busy. It was something great to do that we could do together. So he and I would like build a bottle wall and we just spend a lot of time looking for just the right bottle and just the right rock. Because if your building materials aren't all the same size, you really have to be sort of mindful of what you're picking, you know, so it all balances together, right?
Well, you know, when I read about Tinkertown, I said, oh, I got to put that on my list of things to do, because that's the kind of place that I just love to go to. I mean, you know, out of the ordinary and having carved things that are done beautifully. Now, I got to ask you about growing up. Did you ever realize how unique your childhood was? Because didn't your dad burn things in the backyard and blow them up? I mean, that I thought that's terrific. I would have liked that.
He was a very flamboyant soul. You know, he would just decide look, if your homework was not the way that you liked it, let's just burn it. Or let's make a big hot air balloon out of newspaper and see if we can get it to go just with a little fire. You know, like, he was very experimental and interested in almost everything. You know, he made newspaper eucalyptus trees. He wood carved stuff and made giant dinosaurs out of cardboard for my birthday parties. He was just an amazing person to be around, a great force of creativity. And so I think I felt lucky, but I never felt like, oh my gosh, this is so weird, I can't totally handle it. I think he was just so, oh my gosh, I never thought, wow, like, the guy
he certainly he thought outside the box.
He did.
And he was interested in everything, and I think that's, oh my gosh, you know, if more people were interested in everything, it would make their life so fascinating. But it's a rare, rare talent. Now,
it is.
It certainly is. Now, I wanted to ask you about your father's Alzheimer's.
Yes.
What age was he diagnosed with it? And doesn't it play a big factor, like in your family, because other members have had it?
It's true. My father was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's when he was 57, and he died when he was 62. So early onset Alzheimer's really operates at a much greater speed than late onset Alzheimer's, which happens, you know, my grandmother, his mother, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's while we were in the midst of taking care of my dad. She also had Alzheimer's, and so she had late onset, and she was diagnosed in her late 70s. And so it was a very hard and very sad time to look at these two people that I come directly from and realize, like, oh my gosh, this runs so hard in my family. My great grandmother, my grandmother's mother, had Alzheimer's. I mean, she lived in a home for a long, long time and never really recognized us. My grandmother's sister. It definitely runs on that side of our family. So it is scary for me to think about it. And now whenever I have a little moment of bloop, it's more frightening than it would be.
Oh, of course. And so I'm sure that you live in the moment a lot.
Yes.
You know, it's a way of adjusting and really enjoying life.
Absolutely.
Now,
and I think you can't be too afraid either. I don't want to spend every minute of my day thinking, oh my gosh, like, this may be it, like, whatever, you know, anything could happen at any time. But I do think that after kind of going through our experience, it made me realize that you've got to just, you know, live every day just really as fully as you possibly can, and don't spend too much time going, I wonder if I should do that, or is that too scary? Just do it, and why not, you know? And that, I think, is a gift from my dad, a really huge gift of the whole process, really, is just that need to...
And you haven't fallen into the, you know, the abyss where bad things happen to people and we don't have any control over them.
Right.
We just want to stop living and crawl into a hole.
Exactly. We have control over every day we live. We can say yes instead of, well, maybe later, or I don't have enough money, or I can't do that right now. Just yeah, figure it out if you want to do it, because I think that's really powerful. And that's really what my dad did was, and I don't think he knew that he only had so much time, but he sort of lived like he did. You know, there's like a beautiful sort of glowing light to his brief candle, you know.
Oh, that's, you know, and that's a beautiful way to put it. Now, you felt you were hand-wired to take care of your family, but it wasn't an awful push and pull because you wanted to take care of your father, but at the same time you wanted to get on with your own life. Getting married and starting a family.
Yeah, you know, that was a very hard thing for me. I had just started dating a guy. I was living in Los Angeles when my dad was diagnosed, and I was seeing this lovely guy, and it hadn't been very long, you know, maybe not even quite a year, but he was really seeming like a keeper. But I felt like I got to go home, because if I don't spend this time with my dad, I'm always going to regret it. I'm going to wonder, like, did I do enough? Was I there? Could I have been with him more? Could we have had more experiences? I'm going to wonder, and I'm going to feel like I didn't do everything that I knew I personally could do, because I think in an illness, everyone has a limit. And I don't know if I understood at the time, like, that there was more, but I just felt like I would have this nagging worry. And so I said to my lovey, like, I gotta go, and and we'll just see how this works, you know. And he was a saint. He just kept coming to New Mexico and helping out and doing great things and shoveling snow off the roof and looking after my dad and looking after my grandmother. And it was so, I just thought, oh, my God, this guy is amazing. And in that I realized, you know, my family of origin is my family, but part of your job as a grown-up is to kind of go out in the world and find your own place and your own family. And so I really felt like I owed it to my dad not to hunker down and, you know, be the dutiful daughter and stay at home with him all the time and to the bitter end. You know, he wanted to see me kind of move out, start my own campfire away from the family in a way. And so I moved back to L.A. and married my husband while my dad was still alive. We kind of put a really rush job on everything. And that was amazingly wonderful. And I think the experience of taking care of my dad really informed the kind of wife I became and the kind of mother, definitely.
And also had a lot to do with writing, which you've always been the writer. And so you started your memoir with a written note to help you deal with your dad's altered language and behavior. And I thought this was so meaningful when you asked your dad this important question, what does this feel like when you forget? And I thought his response was so sad, but so right on target, and something we really don't know.
Yes, absolutely. It was amazing to hear him explain it so clearly, and it stuck with me forever. And he said it's like setting a table, and you get everything out, and just almost when you're finished, all the napkins and silverware right where they're supposed to be, the whole table starts to kind of slide, and you're trying quickly to put things back where they should be, but you are forgetting, you don't know where they go anymore, and after a while, you don't even know what they are. And then he said to me, you know, I went to the drawer in the kitchen the other night for a fork, and I stood there thinking, fork, but I didn't even know what to pick up. And it was so frightening and so completely, you know, what a great, clear description of what's going on in his brain. I was blown away by it.
Tanya Ward Goodman, the author of Leaving Tinkertown, in conversation with Carol Marks. More information, go to TanyaWardGoodman.com. It's published by the University of New Mexico Press. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Looking ahead to this next half hour of A Touch of Gray, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're going to be joined momentarily by our senior correspondent, Stephen J.J. Wiseman. We call him Steve Wiseman around here. And what a great interview he's got coming up for you. He's going to be talking with, here's a name from the 80s that I think you'll recall, Nina Blackwood. How many of you remember Nina Blackwood? She was MTV's first VJ, and now she hosts two nationally syndicated radio shows, New Wave Nation and Absolutely 80s. And she's going to talk to Steve about her career and her book titled VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave, which is published by Atria Books. And that should be a lot of fun, no question about it, because as I look back on that period when MTV first came around, but even more importantly, the evolution of rock and roll, when you look at the late 70s and the early 80s, that was a fabulous time because so many of the established acts like the Eagles and Journey and Foreigner and the Beatles and the Stones and Led Zeppelin and the real established album-oriented rock acts were challenged at that time. They were challenged by a whole new crop of young rockers that called themselves punk. And they were in garages. And they were playing in little small clubs. And they weren't necessarily, part of the big corporate mega music scene. They were inspired largely by the movement that started in England. And you had, Johnny Rotten
and all those the groups there that, you know, God save the Queen, and it was just a wild time. The punk movement was not really embraced by the established rock movement. There was a schism. Eventually they came together, as Billy Joel said, "It's still rock and roll to me." And that song came out of that period. But the punk movement sort of evolved as the 70s turned into the 80s into the New Wave movement. And the New Wave movement was like with the Cars and the Fix. It was just a great, now looking back at all that music, Blondie, I just love it all. And we'll see where Steve and Nina go. That's coming up next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, as promised, here's Steve Wiseman, in conversation with Nina Blackwood. She was MTV's first VJ and now hosts two nationally syndicated radio shows, New Wave Nation and Absolutely 80s. She's going to talk to Steve about her career and her book titled VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave, published by Atria Books.
When you first went to MTV, did you have any idea what you were getting into?
As a channel, and the success that it ultimately had, no. I think everybody that was involved, from the executives and the creators to the VJs, it was a gamble. But I kind of thought that video music would be something that would be really popular. Whether or not a 24-hour channel was viable, that was anyone's guess.
When did you realize that you had become a celebrity?
I never think of myself to this day. I don't use that term to describe myself. I really don't. But I could judge the channel and our popularity. It's kind of a long story for people who didn't know, who weren't there, and didn't know that cable TV was in its infancy. So we weren't in New York, even where the studios were. So when they sent us out to the places that did have MTV, for instance, one time I was sent to San Antonio, Texas, for a personal appearance. And they're driving me into the parking lot of a shopping mall, and I see this line wrapped around the whole place, right? And I said to the driver, I go, "Well, who's here?" You know, thinking it's like, you know, I don't know, Adam Ant, whatever. And he says, "It's you." I go, "Wow." You know, so we actually, were finding out when we'd be sent to other parts of the country. And then once we hit New York, it was like, oh, my God, you know, I'd have firemen actually waving to me when they're screaming by, and cops giving me rides uptown. And so that's when we figured out something was happening.
Now, you did a lot of interviews over the years. What was the most difficult one that you did?
Oh, it's in the book. And actually, for the most part, I can say in all the years that I've done interviews, about 99% of them are great. You know, I love doing it. The artists are cooperative. But unfortunately, the one that was to this day, and I knock on wood because I hope not to ever have as bad an experience, was with Frank Zappa. And it was one of our first live shows. We were broadcasting. He used to play at a venue in New York every Halloween, a special Halloween show. And for some reason, they chose me to host it, and that was a mistake. They should have chosen JJ or Mark, more so JJ. And, you know, Frank Zappa, who, you know, in the best of situations is surly and
right.
is known for his cynicism. And he just, I mean, he just took me to task. It was really unfair, and it was like a bully picking on, you know, the little wallflower girl in the playground. It was very unfair, and it was very traumatizing.
Did he ever apologize?
That way.
Did he ever apologize?
Oh, Frank, nah.
All right, is that why you had him?
Cool.
All right, is that why you had him killed? Or no, sorry,
I didn't know. You know, rest his soul. But that was, you know, it was a very bad experience.
Rock stars are. Let's see, we'll come up with a good eccentric. So, of all of the wild ones and eccentrics, who was the most eccentric that you encountered?
Most eccentric.
Wild.
You know, I don't know. That's a tough question because. You know, they all are unique, you know, in their own ways. I mean, you know, Bev and I were just talking about Stevie Nicks. Stevie Nicks is a true eccentric. Whether she's the most eccentric person I've spoken with, I can't say that, but she is eccentric. She's lovely and wonderful and magical, but that's eccentric, you know.
How about Joe Walsh?
You know, so that's a tough question, but I'll say Stevie Nicks is up there. Yeah.
How about Joe Walsh? Because I recently saw there was a piece, a documentary about the Eagles, and they were talking about in his day, Joe Walsh was just a madman, wrecking rooms
Joe,
and all.
Yeah. Well, Joe. Actually, I met Joe. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and the James Gang were big, very popular band when I was growing up. And I first met Joe, I didn't even drive yet. I don't know, I think I was maybe 14. My dad drove me and my girlfriends to, you know, a teen club where they were playing. And then later, you know, at MTV, we reconnected. And, you know, we just hit it off. And I love Joe. Joe is one of my favorite people in the whole world. I just love Joe. But, you know, he was a wild guy. You know, I mean, you're talking about somebody, if he wanted adjoining rooms in a hotel, he, you know, notoriously would just take a chainsaw and cut a hole in the wall. But,
makes sense.
Yeah, so Joe is... I always smile when I think of Joe, and of course he's been clean and sober, thank God, because he was probably going to bite the dust if he kept on the way he did many years ago. So he's been clean and sober for years, happily married to Barbara Bach's sister, and I can't remember her name. So he's actually now... Ringo Starr's brother-in-law.
Now there's a picture.
Fun holiday times with that family.
I was just thinking, can you see getting together for them with them for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, but Joe's brilliant. That's the other thing. You know, he's a brilliant guitarist, but he's also genius level IQ. He's a brilliant person.
Interesting.
And I have nothing but loving thoughts about Joe.
I'm still trying to picture him carving the Thanksgiving bird with a chainsaw, but that's another.
Yeah, I don't think he does that anymore, but I'm sure he did at one time.
You know, MTV has changed a lot, and a lot of us aren't terribly thrilled with some of the changes in some of these reality shows. What do you think of how MTV has evolved from the early days?
Well, I'm with you on that. I'm not a fan of reality television at all anyway.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. Across the board, whether it's on MTV or wherever. Unless if you call nature documentaries reality, that's a different story, but not, you know, this garbage. And I just am really disappointed that they chose to go in that direction. I mean, you know, a format that that MTV started with 24/7 videos and all that would not still work in this day and age of the internet, but at least keep a thread of music on there.
Yeah.
You could do all sorts of specialty shows and even have a couple of hours showing videos. That would work, but they just completely took the music out of music television. In fact, if you remember the early logo, it had the MTV, and then it said music television,
yeah,
like a banner across it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, several years ago, they actually took that banner off the logo because there is no music television.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't exist. So I don't know. I don't know who watches it. I don't.
Yeah.
I'll maybe tune in to the VMAs, depending on the year, depending on what, you know, who's going to be on. But, you know, it's such a different animal. I feel no connection at all with present-day MTV.
Now, you're still involved with music. Tell us what you're doing.
Yes, I love music. And I love radio, so that's what I'm doing. I have two syndicated shows, Nina Blackwood's Absolutely 80s and New Wave Nation, which run nationally through United Stations Radio Networks. And then I'm on daily Sirius XM 8.
That's terrific. Now, when you got together to do the new book with the other VJs, the original VJs, had you guys stayed in touch, or was it like getting back together after years and years?
No, we've always been in touch. We have never not been in touch. Of course, working on the book, we were, you know, in touch like every 5 minutes. You know, no matter where we live, we're kind of spread out. Martha's in California. Alan was in Birmingham. He's now in Chicago. Mark is in New York, and I'm in Maine. So, you know, a lot of what we do is, you know, emails, and during the writing of the book, a lot of conference calls. But we've always been very close. I'd say, though, that the book, working on the book, because we thought we knew everything there was to know about each other, for crying out loud, 30 years,
yeah,
you would think so. And all of us, respectively, found out things we didn't know about the others. We go, like, well, we didn't know you did that. Really? You did that? So I think working on the book, and then the consequent, you know, the press junket and everything even brought us closer together, if that's possible. But yeah, we're very, very tight. We love each other like one huge, big, dysfunctional family.
you got to be pleased with the reaction to the book as you've been touring around, aren't you?
Very much, and you know, it's very, very touching to all of us. It really is. I mean, when we were doing like the book signings, the bookstores, and people would be lining up with their books, I mean, it was actually bringing me to tears. It was so moving, and they would share stories about growing up and watching us, and, you know, little things that stuck out in their mind. And the only way I can describe it is that you really feel love. I know that sounds so sappy.
But it isn't.
But you really can feel the love. You really can. And to me, it is quite emotional and quite moving. I mean, because, you know, doing what we did, yeah, you got the fan mail, but, you know, we had interns answer. We didn't,
yeah,
we got too much. We couldn't answer it ourselves. And it was a little bit different during the time, but all these years later, you know, to have people that are fans and care enough to plop down, you know, the 20-some dollars or whatever, you know, the book costs to read about us. I mean, it's just like, wow. You know, I mean, really, it's just like, oh, my God, that's the coolest thing, you know, coolest thing. What more
well,
could you
it
ask
really,
for?
Nina Blackwood, in conversation with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman here on A Touch of Gray, talking about her new book that she co-wrote with all the VJs from MTV's first year. And VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave is the name of it, and it's published by Atria Books. Steve Wiseman will return, and he will discuss telephone scams. That's next. On A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We've come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast and a continued appearance by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. As I mentioned earlier, he's also known as Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's a lawyer. He's really a knowledgeable guy. He's a great guy that knows so much about so many things. I'd call him a Renaissance man. One of his specialties and one of his passions is this whole subject of scams and fraud. He doesn't like them, thank goodness. Yeah, he's a good guy. He has a website called Scamicide.com. Isn't that a great name? Scamicide.com. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And sometimes he joins us at this point in the program to talk about scams to avoid. Today, they are telephone scams. Steve?
Michael, you may remember the movie The Postman Always Rings Twice. Actually, a classic movie from 1946. I believe it was with John Garfield, very cool actor. Remade in 1981, starring Jack Nicholson, another cool actor. And why am I mentioning this? Well, maybe The Postman Always Rings Twice, but scam artists only need to ring once to hook you into a scam that can add hundreds of dollars to your phone bill on something called cramming. Now, the scam starts innocently enough. There's a call to your cell phone from a number you don't recognize. Now, what a lot of us do at that point is we don't pick it up. But you get that curiosity, you know, killing the cat kind of thing. And so you've got a chance to decide, okay, do I want to take the call? Probably not. Caller disconnects after a single ring. So now you end up, well,
Am I going to call it back? And a lot of people do. They call it back, and it's usually an area code that you don't recognize. In this particular scam, you will end up calling a premium rate telephone number, you know, these 900 numbers or something, for a service like music, psychics, or even porn, that will result in your incurring a charge on your phone bill. And the longer you stay on the line with this, and they do try and keep you on for a long time, the higher the charges will be. Now, this scam really started many years ago in Jamaica, and the Jamaican area code, by the way, is 876, and unless you've got a friend who is vacationing in Montego Bay, don't you accept a telephone call with an 876 area code, because there's going to be nothing but trouble. But right now, a lot of other Caribbean islands are running this scam, or people in these islands, Antigua, Barbados, the Dominican Republic, and Grenada. All of these are places, hotbeds for this scam. So don't fall prey to your curiosity, because it can end up costing you money. If you're tempted, you want to return the call that hung up just after one ring, just get that number, Google the area code, first of all, and if the call originated in a foreign country, particularly one from a Caribbean country, such as Jamaica, that 876 area code, don't even return it. Another thing, actually, a lot of this is done in Japan, too, so don't return it regardless where it comes from, the foreign country. Consider yourself lucky that you've just dodged a scam attempt. The safest and best thing to do if you get a call that disconnects after just one ring is, as they say in the movies, forget about it.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman. And again, check out scamaside.com and check out The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Steve Wiseman, a regular feature of our program. And our program, this hour at least, has come to a conclusion. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line. Thank you to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, and to all the people involved, people like Kevin Casey and Steve Wiseman. And we certainly do appreciate your joining us. As a matter of fact, I'm Michael Harrison, your anchor, inviting you to join us again right here next weekend, same time, same place, for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.